Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to this bi-weekly broadcast of Money and Other Things Financial. It's Halloween, but as I prefer to refer to it, as October 31st, 2021, not being a big fan of Halloween. I did do a little research on it, so I'll read you a few facts you might be interested in. The day goes back to times before the country even started. Halloween's origins date back to the ancient Celtic festival of Samhain. The Celts, who lived 2,000 years ago mostly in the area that is now Ireland, the United Kingdom, and northern France, celebrated their new year on November 1st. So this Halloween would be the eve before that celebration of the new year in those times. When did the U.S. first start celebrating Halloween? I didn't know this. On this day, October 31st in 1920, Anoka, A-N-O-K-A, Minnesota, became the first town in America to celebrate Halloween. The town had been plagued by a band of merry pranksters in the previous Halloweens and decided to make a citywide event to keep the teenagers occupied. The celebration observed in many countries on October 31st, the eve of the Western Christmas feast of All Hallows' Day. Well, as we also know, it is All Saints' Day, which would be November 1st. So Hallow would be the old word for saints. And might have the expression hallow ground. But Halloween, the ween part might be the een, the eve of Hallow Eve. So the day of November 1st would be the night before that would be Hallow's Eve, the eve of the Western Christian feast of All Hallows' Day. So you might not have known that. I didn't know some of that, but we can all learn. But I don't like the nature of celebrating evil things, dark, underworld type activities, and it seems like the forces that like that tend to weave its way in, get us to accept it by making us think it's a minor issue, and little by little they demoralize our society, and we have the monster that we have, that we see happening in our country today, when principles of the country that on which it was founded are being attacked and and destroyed. As I said many times, the words of the KGB agent who warned us about the four steps that communists in those days, the Soviet Union, they had a training in which they said the way to overcome or take over a country is the four steps of demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization. So you see, we're well along in that path, and we thankfully people are waking up, and hopefully they'll put a stop to it. And they are this, we see the critical race theory and the parents protesting at the school boards. These are all good signs. Just do it respectfully and forcefully, but don't resort to violence. Just overcome evil with good, as they say. So anyway, I want to welcome you to the show and let you know that the chat room is open. And let me see if anyone's in there. No, there's no one in there as usual. On Halloween, they're probably all out trick-or-treating or something, although they did it here on Friday. And it was not much happening as far as that activity on Saturday, Sunday. Of course, today Saturday we had a lot of rain, and today also, so they were probably lucky to get it in on the Friday, the 30th of October. So there's no one in the chat room, but if you do come in, you can talk to people in there, chat with them about the issues of the day. If you want to call in, the call-in number is 914-803-4379. And if you do call in, give me your first name and what city or state you're calling from. And if you're outside the country, what city and country you're calling from. And again, I just want to say it's the last day of October. We'll be now heading into what I call the four rough months, November, December, January, and February in Boston and the Northeast here, where we are well familiar with the winters and why many people leave this area in the winter because of the weather can be sometimes brutal, but who knows? Maybe with global warming, we'll get some warm weather. That might be the upside of global warming, although I wouldn't count on it. I'm not a big advocate of the dangers of global warming, but we should be good to the environment and do things that protect it. But we don't need to get carried away with extreme measures, like when we hear stories like the world is going to end if we don't do something by 2030, and the proponents of different activities, I think, are acting irrationally. All right, well, anyway, I got some other things I want to cover, and I'm going to start as usual with the latest on the coronavirus pandemic. It's still with us and seems to be tapering off a little. Sometimes it has its fits and starts. It goes down and then it comes back again. So we still have to deal with it. And I have gotten the figures again for this show, the latest on the statistics. And, of course, you can get them on worldometers.com. Let me give you the exact place to go if you want to check them out. The website is worldometers, worldometersinfo.com/coronavirus, and you'll see all of the stats. I'm not sure, I wouldn't bet any money on the validity of these figures, as I say many times on these shows, that all the figures that we're getting are subject to skepticism, and we need, and especially on the voting figures, and I'll be talking about that shortly with the big elections coming up in Virginia and also in New Jersey and maybe other places, but those are the two I'm going to cover. But anyway, let me give you these figures. On the global scale, the number of infected is 247 million. 434,000, 288, that's up from 235,000, so it's up about 12 million on a global scale. The active is 18,320,800, that's actually down from 18,326,000. So you have people that are recovering, more recovering than getting infected probably. And then the deaths on a global level, 5,014,576. That's up from 4,814,945, or about 200,000 or 100,000 more deaths a year on a global level. Recovered globally, 224,098,910. And again, that's a huge percentage of the amount that's infected. Each person has to look at these and make their own decisions as to what they want to do about dealing with it, especially with regard to the vaccines, whether or not you want to take it. They're mandating it in certain cases, and many of us believe that these mandates are unconstitutional, and Liberty Counsel, among others, is a nonprofit law firm that is very busy helping people that do not want to be vaccinated, and they are applying for religious and medical exemptions. So there's a lot of court cases going on, and if you want to look at Liberty Counsel's website, you can read more about all these and maybe help them by sending them a donation or at least some words of encouragement. So on the USA level, is infected is 46,815,693. That's up from about 44 million, or 2 million more, or a million a week in the USA. And then on the active cases in the USA, 9,343,881. And the deaths in the USA, 766,266. That's up about 50,000 from 2 weeks ago, or 25,000 more deaths every week, which is a lot. Even one death is a lot, but a lot of people are questioning whether all the deaths that are being reported are really from the coronavirus, or could it be other things because of their medical problems that they had, and they also may have contracted the virus, but the death gets blamed basically on the virus. That could be a misleading approach to accumulating these statistics. On the recovered on the USA is 36,660,840. And that's up from 34 million, or about 2.5 more million recovered. So many people do recover, and just remember to pray and check with your doctor as to what he recommends. Listen, do all of your due diligence and make your own decisions. As far as the number of countries that are over a million cases, we're still at the 36th level. There was no new ones have been added, but there are four countries in the 900,000 range approaching a million, and that would be Cuba, Morocco, Kazakhstan, and Vietnam. And then it drops off from there. So it's been rough, and I hope you make sure you don't get overwhelmed by it, but in trust in God, have your faith, say your prayers, and I believe you'll be well taken care of. What else do we have? I want to talk about the elections coming up in Virginia and in New Jersey. The big one that we're mostly following is in Virginia, where Terry McAuliffe is seeking, well, he was the governor in the past, but he's seeking election to the governor's post again. And he is, recent poll came out from Fox that shows he needs to be concerned about, as the poll, the Virginia Shocker is the headline on the New York Post site. Glenn Youngkin, the candidate, the Republican candidate, is up 8% over Democrat Terry McAuliffe in the governor's race poll. So a lot of people, even in a traditionally blue state, are starting to see that they may be having buyer's remorse for the election of 2020, the presidential election. And when Democratic Terry McAuliffe sides himself with the Biden camp, which is sinking in the polls, which I'll be mentioning shortly as I report on the approval rate, approval percentages and disapproval of the president, you can see that Terry McAuliffe may have made a major blunder in inviting Biden to campaign for him and on siding with him, and especially when he said that the people don't have a right to decide how their children are educated. It has to be the government. So I'm sure, I know I, if I had children, I would have had them out of the public schools long ago, but now more people are waking up to that fact, and they are starting to remove them and go into homeschooling or to find some good private schools, Christian schools or whatever. Charter schools may be appropriate, but you cannot let your kids be propagandized or brainwashed, indoctrinated in what Mark Levin calls a Marxism philosophy, which is nothing but totalitarianism, and we can see it clearly now. You'd have to be living under a rock not to recognize what has been happening here and what's behind it all. It's a movement, a Marxist movement, to overtake our country. Let's see, another big issue, of course, in the election is, even though the people may be wanting to vote for the Republican, we still are not 100% sure that the election integrity is still or has been restored, that we can count on the results. They're still using mail-in ballots, which a lot of us are questioning. And, of course, the other procedures for voting may still not have been rectified and resolved to us, to my satisfaction and maybe to many others. We need to have honest elections, but this will be somewhat of a test when we see the results come in. That will be on Tuesday night coming up. Because the other race is in New Jersey, where Governor Murphy is somewhat of a favorite, from what I can gather, over the Republican, who I've never heard of, actually. His name is a little bit hard to pronounce, but let me see if I can give it a try. His name is Governor Phil Murphy is seeking a second term, and his Republican opponent is Jack Ciattarelli. He's aiming to deny him that second term, hoping to return the governor's office to the GOP 4 years after Chris Christie's final term. Of course, we know Chris Christie is a Republican. Not exactly the Republican that many of us really want to back, but certainly better than Murphy or McAuliffe. So we can see how that turns out as well. All right, well, the president has some news. President Trump, that is, Trump 45, he is, has announced he's starting his own social media platform. It's going to be called Truth Social. So he's going to experiment with it for the rest of this year, I believe, and he will go full blast in 2022. So that'll give us a chance to stop using any of these. I don't use them anyway, Twitter or Facebook, or these platforms I don't use at all. I see that they're not serving us well, and I don't want to support them. And remember, you all have your three V's. If you're the only person in the world, you can use your three V's, which are, again, you might get tired of me saying it, but the three V's are your voice, which is your written voice, your spoken voice. You can talk to your friends. You can send emails. You can contact your congressmen, elected officials of all levels, and email them or call them and use your voice. Say you don't agree with critical race theory, or call into a show like this and use your voice. And then number two is your valuables, which is a big one. It's your time and your money. Those are your valuables. Everyone has their time and their money. If they're out of work or they don't have any money to spare for donations to worthy causes, and there are a lot of them out there. I referred to one already tonight was Liberty Council, but there are many others that support the principles of our country and the Constitution. You can use your money to buy a book like American Marxism by Mark Levin and maybe give it to a student that will be going to college in the fall, or that's in college now, maybe a Christmas gift. But there's a lot of ways you can use your money. And your third one, of course, is your vote. A lot of people are saying your vote is a waste of time, especially if there are fraudulent voting, but we're not certain. We haven't proven it yet. There are audits going on, but they haven't reached to the point where we are able to decertify these elections that we're suspect of. But in the meantime, we have to continue to use the best ways possible to get a message across. And so I still recommend you that you vote. I always remember years ago a person said to me, vote and the choice is yours. Don't vote and the choice is theirs. So that's an interesting thought. Okay, well, I'm going to give you the financial information. The Dow Jones is closed and these markets are still hitting all-time highs, which is something that I don't see as being sensible, but if they believe it, they can be pushing it up and pushing it up in a way that is not sensible and may eventually lead to a crash. I know that many people are predicting crashes. I believe Doug Casey is one of them, and it's just a matter of time before we have a market crash. Usually, I think Robert Kiyosaki said the markets will crash in October. Well, we only have less than an hour left in October, but he may be off in that precise prediction. He did precisely say the month of October, but we'll have to hear what he says afterward. But it may be he may be a little early on his prediction, but I certainly agree with him that things don't look good and the market is overvalued. But the Dow closed at 35,819.56. That was up from 34,326.46. The NASDAQ at 15,498.39. That was up about 1,000 points from 2 weeks ago. And the S&P is closed at 4605.38, up from 4357.04. So I believe all those are at new highs or near new highs. Gold has been somewhat stagnant. It has its surges, and then it seems to fall back once it goes over 1800. But it closed the week at a bad day. Friday closed the week at 1784.30, which is still up from 2 weeks ago. Silver closed at 2380.89, and that's up from 2 weeks ago when it was 2253. Many of us still believe that these metals are very much undervalued, so you can do your own research and make your own decisions. And nobody has a crystal ball. Let's see now, a couple of points that I've been reading. I'm going to have to go a little quick here. The Democrats, you probably read, want to pay illegal immigrants $450 million, $450,000 to every illegal immigrant that has come in through the southern border. And you can read the details on what their rationale is, but there is no way that the rationale is sensible to me. So I would say voice your opposition to that. A financial structure is very precarious as it is. So that type of a proposal is just hard to fathom. And then by another unbelievable proposal is that the Democrats want to have unrealized capital gains be taxed. So that means if you have a stock that you haven't sold but it's gone up in value, you will be paying a tax on the unrealized gain that you haven't even realized yet, and it could go down after you pay the tax. I mean, it's just hard to rationalize the thinking behind these proposals. Certainly not with, they don't fit into my type of training as an accountant. So I would tend to voice strong disapproval of any of those moves. By the way, Bitcoin is over 61,000 as I prepared for the show, and its all-time high is 65,993. That was on October the 20th. So Bitcoin may be in for another pullback. Okay, the presidential approval and disapproval figures from Real Clear Politics from October 1st to October 28th. The approval of Biden is 42.6, down. His approval has dropped from 2 weeks ago. His disapproval has gone up slightly. The disapproval rate has gone down slightly, and his disapproval is at 51.9. It was at 49.2. So that's about it, ladies and gentlemen. The next show will be on November 15th. I'm sorry, November 14th on Blog Talk Radio. Please join us. Come in and I'd like to hear from you. Hopefully you can hear some of these shows on the archive by going to blogtalkradio.com and typing in money and other things financial. All of the archive shows are in there. So that's about it. We'll see you on November 14th. God bless you all. And God bless America. Good night, everyone. Well, welcome back, everyone. This is Bostonian, host of The Money Show with the non-live portion of the show. That would be 15 minutes of yours truly talking about the things of interest or reporting to you of other people's views on subjects. And that's what I'm going to do tonight. I'm going to let you sit back and get a nice drink, maybe a cup of tea and some of those end-of-the-month treats that you might have, that you might have bought. I didn't buy any trick-or-treats because I don't, I'm not a fan of cooperating with that that activity. But some of you might have some treats on hand and sit back and listen to this clip that I'm going to play. I think you'll find it enjoyable, informative. One of my favorite persons is Dr. Scott Lively. I worked with him when he was a candidate for governor of Massachusetts in 2014 as an independent candidate, and then his big race in 2018 when he shocked the Republican convention in Worcester, Massachusetts, and received about 27% of the delegates to get himself on the ballot and face Governor Baker, who eventually won. It was a yeoman's task for him to win in that election, but he couldn't have done a better job in campaigning, and he just didn't get any help from the Mass GOP, the Republican Party of Massachusetts. He wasn't even allowed to debate Baker on TV, but he still did real well. I believe he got over a million votes, if I'm not mistaken. But he is a pastor. He's an attorney. He's now very active in his ministries. ScottLively.net is where you can read a lot of his articles and videos, watch his videos. So I'm going to play one of the videos, which you'll just hear the audio, but it's called Joey the Scapegoat, and he says it's by Let's Go Brandon. Of course, we all hear the chants going up, Let's Go Brandon. He calls it Let's Go Brandon. So they certainly it's not a positive chant for Joe Biden. But here he is, Dr. Scott Lively, Joey the Scapegoat by Let's Go Brandon.
The inside secret to politics is that a great many of the major players whose faces we all know and love or loathe have owners in the same way that professional athletes do. This phenomenon can be observed not just in politics, but in every field of human endeavor. The super rich use their money and power to collect stables of talented, controllable people and deploy them on whatever field of play that interests them, in competition with other owners. Think Hollywood in the 1930s and 40s vis-a-vis the ownership of actors by the competing movie studios. Think Judy Garland. Joe Biden has always been owned by one or more of the super rich oligarchs who operate the Blue League. As a reliable team player over the decades, his level of competence has obviously mattered less than his obedience and loyalty. Like most assets of his type, he's been rewarded by being allowed to plunder the public trough in the usual ways and to exploit and extort those seeking favors from American policymakers, including foreign business interests. His lifetime of service to this system of organized crime paid off big time when he was tapped for VP under Obama and given extensive piracy rights in Ukraine. Biden's closest equivalent in the Red League is arguably Paul Ryan, who, like Romney, the Red League's Hillary, is an asset of the Bush dynasty, in a way that Biden is an asset of the Clintons. Or perhaps Biden might more accurately be called an asset of the Massachusetts Kennedys, who had the muscle to force Hillary to step aside for Obama in 2008. It's hard to identify the actual relationships from the outside, especially when the key players with control of the dynastic money and political machinery aren't necessarily visible to the public like Ted Kennedy was. I don't think it's any accident that A-list asset Obama, quote-unquote, retired to the Kennedy's Grand Duchy of Martha's Vineyard. The one inarguable fact is that B-list Biden is somebody's stooge. Going into the 2018 midterms, I believe the elite's longer-term plan for the 2020 presidential election was a blue and red Massachusetts strategy to put Elizabeth Warren, the senior senator from Massachusetts, into the White House and Rhino Governor Charlie Baker, a Bush-Romney asset, on her cabinet, and then perhaps in the White House in 4 or 8 years. I've always contended that their intention was to run Baker against Trump in the 2020 primary as the quote-unquote voice of Republican reason, the role former Massachusetts Governor Romney, turned Utah senator, was forced to play instead, much less effectively. And then, post-primary, Baker campaigned for Warren. But by the end of 2018, my 36.1% primary showing against Baker, which destroyed the elite's marketing campaign to define him as the most popular governor in America, plus Trump's lethal and relentless Pocahontas mockery of Warren, made the Massachusetts strategy untenable. President Trump then proceeded to demolish the Democrat bench one by one until only Obama heir Joe Biden appeared to stand any chance against him, a public perception made possible only through massive media deceit and grossly rigged polling. In the end, the Purple Uniparty had to cheat on a scale never before seen in world history to make Biden the putative president. They were forced to fall back to Plan B. If their Plan A Massachusetts strategy had worked, the globalist transition to a one-world government would have been relatively smooth and easy. It would have been even easier if Hillary had won the 2016 election. But they knew Plan B was never going to be clean. It was going to require a messy collapse of the old order to force the increasingly rebellious world populace to submit. Someone would have to take the blame. And so Biden's final sacrifice for the team was to play himself as Dementia Joe through the collapse, that's part one of the Great Reset, and then go out with a dramatic finish as Joey the Scapegoat, making way for the globalist false messiah, my money's on Obama, to step in and save the day, part two of the Great Reset. I predicted Joe Biden would be the Dems candidate against Trump on February 5th, 2020, based on their national convention debacle. And I've long predicted he will be the scapegoat for whatever goes wrong. Obama himself pretty much telegraphed Biden's usefulness as a scapegoat. As quoted in Politico during the primary, quote, one Democrat who spoke to Obama recalled the former president warning, don't underestimate Joe's ability to F things up. I hypothesized during the Afghanistan debacle that the elites might stage a Biden stroke during a staged hostage crisis, a la Benghazi, as part of an Obama return to power strategy. With over 300 abandoned Americans still under Taliban control, that's still a viable scenario. But based on factors existing today, I think the most likely Great Reset scenario is a 2021 and 22 winter collapse followed by a spring recovery that features Biden's removal. I explained my reasoning in my most recent article on World.Daily, or maybe it was the one before. Anyone but Joey the scapegoat would suffer severe consequences for screwing things up so colossally, even for what he's already done, let alone what comes next. As I said in my Afghan hypothesis, quote, my guess is that the Hollywood scriptwriter helping Barack Obama design his return to power strategy wants to give Joe, the faithful water boy for the Uniparty, a tragic exit designed to maximize public sympathy for him now and in the history books. Plus, whatever consequences and culpability there might be for the election fraud emerging from the shower of evidence that's about to begin could be deflected to Biden as well, along with the mantra, but hey, hasn't the poor guy suffered enough? End quote. The concept of the scapegoat is from Leviticus 16 from the Bible, describing a Yom Kippur ritual in which two goats are chosen by lot for sacrifice. One is, quote, for the Lord, and its blood is sprinkled on the mercy seat, the lid of the Ark of the Covenant, in the Holy of Holies by the high priest. The other, the scapegoat, was designated to bear all the sins of the Jews into the wilderness so that the people could escape the consequences of those sins on that annual Day of Atonement. Joe Biden is the intended scapegoat for the sins of all the traitors and co-conspirators in the election coup and unfolding collapse, chosen precisely because he is a feeble and senile old man who, quote, shouldn't be punished, and won't realize what's happening to him if he is. It is really up to we the people, however, to accept or reject any scapegoat. And so I say we reject Joey the scapegoat and go after the ones actually to blame. The bottom line is that Biden is just a figurehead, and I stake my very name on it, Let's Go Brandon. So there it is. I'm not Let's Go Brandon. I'm Scott Lively. But that's my article. God bless you, and I will talk with you next time.
Well, what do you think of that, ladies and gentlemen? Interesting thoughts from Dr. Scott Lively. It certainly can, for most people that don't do this type of analysis, it can be overwhelming to follow it all, as in all of the games that go on, or the serious consequences of these games that go on in politics. I remember a friend of mine, who I challenged in Massachusetts on it, some issues, and why the GOP wasn't following certain principles, and I was taking exception to the power elite, so to speak, and he commented that politics makes for strange bedfellows. So we seem to be less principled and more trying to just win at all costs, and we end up sacrificing the things we're very much fighting for. I think it was Richard Nixon that said, if you don't get elected, then you can't accomplish your objectives either. So it's kind of like caught between a rock and a hard place. If you give up your principles to get elected, and what have you got left? And if you don't give up your principles, then you don't get elected. So I don't know. This is the dilemma that we face, and why many of us, oftentimes when we vote, we follow the expression that we're voting for the lesser of two evils. There is no one is perfect. So I think we it's understandable that we have to do that and keep trying to upgrade as we move forward. But then the other side is diligently working, it seems, day and night for their objectives, which is a one-world government. And you can see the recent meeting between the Pope and Obama, where the Pope is describing, Biden said the Pope said that the Pope believes that he is a good Catholic, even though he promotes the pro-choice platform of the Democratic Party, which of course is not in keeping with the pro-life view that Christians should have. So, these are the things that go on, but I'm running out of time, so I'm going to sign off and say good night. God bless you. We'll see you in 2 weeks. And God bless America.